So yeah, I was really interested in the political scientists you had on earlier, particularly talking about the ANC and the DA and various other things. And it struck me there's a huge political opportunity for someone in South Africa, but I doubt it's the DA. I mean, from what I can see of what they've done so far in government, is just facilitate the ANC to be slightly less worse than they were before. And that's not a dream or an aspiration that South Africans should have. And I think there's a huge gap in the market for someone to come through it that can actually take this country on and fix the issues. But it's also as well, I mean, listen to the other guy that was talking about it. I think we overthink things. If you think about what happened at the end of apartheid, really the white guys did a better deal than the black guys. And in fact, all the property, all the wealth, all the companies retained by the white population. And it's fairly inevitable that the black population were going to take it back somehow. And that's through BEE, through the government, through state capture. So in a way, it was set up by the independence deal, and that was always going to happen. And so we reached that point now, though, where the ANC is dropping in popularity. It's gone from 50 to 40. Some say lower, and I think it's going to continue on that trajectory. But I think there's huge opportunities for a breakout party like Reform that could actually break through and become a party of government in South Africa. You look at Reform, it's come from absolutely nowhere, and it's broken through. So in the world of social media, in the world of faster moving political entities, stuff can happen real quick. Look at Argentina. It happened bang overnight. So I'll stick off South African politics because that's not my speciality. Other than to say, as far as I can see, the DA do not look like a party of government. They look like a party facilitating a less worse version of the ANC. That's my view for what it's worth. I was specifically asked to speak about Trump. I think he's misunderstood. I think that would be the polite way of putting it. But he's a rare politician. He's a politician that actually does what he says he's going to do. And that's a rarity. Now, I recently flew to Victoria Falls, and I always like to ask a taxi driver or the air hostess, what did you vote for at the last election? Because I'm always interested in people's opinions. And the woman said, the air hostess said, well, you won't like the answer. So I thought, oh, maybe she's talking about Gayton McKenzie. but actually, she said, I voted for Malema. She said, but if Donald Trump was here, I'd vote for him. So interesting comment, I thought. But five things that Trump said he was going to do. One was stop illegal immigration on the southern border, which pretty much he's done. I don't know if you followed that, but the legal crossings are down 95% in under 3 months, which shows with resolution what you can do if you really want to do it. So he's come straight out of the blocks and done it. The second point was America first, which is these tariffs or the kind of issue around the trade deficit that the US is running. If you look at January, the US trade deficit was $150 billion US dollars. So the whole world sees the US market as Treasure Island. Now, of that $150 billion, $60 billion was with Canada. So you can see why Canada is now in the firing line. I'm not sure I like the 51st state of America stuff. I think that's going a little bit over the top. But the tariff situation, if you like, is a reaction to the fact that countries have been basically using America as a dumping ground. And he's saying, no, it's going to stop. So if you think about promises made and promises kept, first one was immigration, massive topic in American politics. The second was tariffs. Tick. Now, whether it's going to end the way he wants it to end is a different kettle of fish. I think he's wrong about, you know, you collect huge amounts of money from tariffs. What it generally does is protect your market in the same way the EU have protected their market and Canada. I mean, Canada have got some tariffs of 250% on some products. They ferociously protect their dairy market and various other things. So I think that will be modified. I think he's got that wrong, but I think that will be nuanced and it will be modified. The third thing was drain the swamp. And also the fact that a 36 trillion deficit, the country's going broke. So you may think that Elon Musk is a bit of a crazy guy. I think I do as well. But actually, he's attacking a real world problem, which is corruption, fraud, and the misuse of public money. In fact, someone said corruption is bad in South Africa. The number one most corrupt country in the world is the United States of America by a country mile. It's just they're better at, they're more developed at exploiting corruption, particularly political corruption. So he's come straight out and gone, yep, we're going to try and cut the deficit. We're going to try and sort those issues out, and he's trying to do it. Now, you could argue Elon Musk is, as I say, a bit of a crazy guy, but he's actually doing what they said they were going to do. The fourth thing he promised was to scrap net zero and drill, baby, drill. They're going to ensure that America's got the lowest energy prices in the world, which will give itself the best chance of being a manufacturing country again. So you've got the tariffs, low energy, and they're going to try and bring jobs back to America. And the final thing, which is probably the most controversial of the lot, if you accept settling the war with Ukraine and in Gaza, is he wants to smash, and I mean smash, the existing world order of supra nationalistic organizations, the World Health Organization. He's got BRICS firmly in his sights. He wants to return the world to sovereign, independent nation state. And that is the thing that's probably going to be the hardest of the five things to do. Even if you look at Ukraine, in the UK, there's been a huge upcry about the meeting with Zelensky. The Europeans now saying we're going to put £1 trillion into our own defense. And Donald Trump's going, great. It's your business. You sort it out. And so actually, he's already achieved another massive goal in his geopolitical strategy, which was the Europeans pay for their own defense. So we come on to Trump and Africa. The final kind of point I would make is that in terms of spheres of influence, I think Donald Trump sees Africa as an area where he wants to get the Chinese out of Africa. And I think if you look at what he's doing with the Russians, trying to seal a peace with Ukraine and bring the Russians kind of back into the tent rather than outside the tent, I think the threat of Russia is massively overestimated. Its economy is the size of Spain. It's batting way beyond its averages, whereas Trump would see the real enemy as China. And so I think he's thinking we'll settle this issue and then we'll move on to the main event, which is China. And I think he probably sees South Africa and Africa as mineral rich in the same way as Greenland. And I think they're going to definitely turn their attention to kicking the Chinese out of Africa. So I think there's going to be a lot of excitement down the track. I didn't want to go on too long because I've been promised a Q&A session. And the final thing I think is that if they can fix the budget deficit, if they can fix the trade imbalances, then what they're going to try and do is unleash a new revolution, which is artificial intelligence, robotics, healthcare. America, for all its sins, is at the cutting edge of most technology, and they're going to unleash that into the world. I think that'll be down the track. If we think about the five things he got elected on, he's damn well doing all five. Now, you could say it's the same as trying to rewire a jumbo jet in flight, what he's trying to do, and the jumbo jet might crash. That's a possibility. But I think the existing structures and the existing economic strategy of the world is going to hell in a handcart anyway. So I'm glad someone's given it a go.
You got any water?
Thank you, Aaron. Maybe just to put a bit more context, how well do you know Trump the person?
We have various meetings with Trump. The thing that's always amazed me was that when we met him for the, I think it was about the third time after he got elected in 2016, we spent 3 hours with him up in Trump Tower when he'd just been elected president. We were the first people to see him. What astonished me was that he was quite a quiet personality in private. So off camera, he's very thoughtful and quiet and actually talks less than the people he's talking to. As soon as you switch a camera on, it's like plugging him into the national grid. He just explodes. So he's quite a complex character. And I think, you know, the mainstream media, they want to hate him. But I think he's going to be judged by the results. I looked at the thing that came out this morning about Ukraine, and he's managed to persuade the Ukrainians to agree to, or the US and the Ukrainians have agreed, a peace package to take to the Russians. I can't believe anyone else would have been able to achieve that. Now, it may ultimately fail, but I think what you'll find now he's got the Ukrainians on side, the temperature and his angst will rise with the Russians to sign the deal. And I think that's when it'll become interesting, because he's been criticized for being pro-Russian. I think he's just a businessman that likes a deal. He's transactional. And so sometimes you have to be a bit creative and upset people to get things done.
It was a very interesting conversation that we had this morning, where Moletsi Mbeki was talking about how South Africa's transition occurred. And he spoke about a meeting between Ronald Reagan and Gorbachev, where they made a decision that Gorbachev would stop arming the ANC once Reagan had got the National Party to move towards democracy, which was really interesting for us to think at that level those decisions are made. What decisions do you think are being made now between Putin, who funded, as we heard from Bill Johnson, funded the MK party? There's no doubt that he was behind that. Would that even come into play when they have their conversations?
I think, as I say, I think the Russians are punching above their economic weight. And I think in terms of what America thinks of South Africa, I think probably not a lot at the moment. I mean, if you think of what's sitting on Trump's desk, you know, an Israeli-Palestinian war, Ukraine and Russia, he wants to settle those first. But I think he sees Russia as a third division power, and I think he'd rather have them on side than outside the tent. You know, to quote John Major, he'd rather have them in the tent pissing out than pissing on the tent. So I think this whole European thing that's been made out of this, that there's some bogeymen that are going to be in Paris by tea time, it's just utter nonsense. And I think what America thinks is geopolitically that they'll want the Chinese out of Africa.
That's a big ask, given how deep the tentacles are in Africa.
Yeah, but most African countries, the concept of ownership is a very transitory arrangement. They kicked the Russians out once before. I mean, I grew up partially in Somalia, where my father ran a sugar estate, and they'd had the Americans in, the Russians, the Americans. They didn't give a, you know, didn't care what the Russians had done for them. They kicked them out when it suited them.
And the feedback that you're getting about the Africa general response, I mean, 54 countries, so we can't be universal about it, but your taxi driver saying, I would vote for Malema or Donald Trump, which is interesting. What's the feedback you're getting from other parts of the continent?
I don't really know. I don't have that much to do with the rest of Africa. I spend a lot of time in South Africa. But let's say, look at the Democratic Alliance, who do a decent job of running Cape Town. But they still seem to, you know, you talk about crime, you talk about various issues. If you've got nothing, then it's, you know, these are the societal issues that arise from this massive wealth imbalance. And I think, you know, for instance, in Cape Town, you know, after the Second World War, we built 3 million homes in the UK that were destroyed. You know, someone's looking for a government to actually do something, you know, put proper water in, build houses, build, you know, electricity, decent schools. They just want decent, you know, outcomes for their families. And I think that's the issue in South Africa, that the first person that comes along, actually, a bit like Trump, is prepared to say what they're going to do and do it, is going to do extremely well.
Getting back to the Trump relationship with South Africa, he did make a few mentions of it. Elon, yeah, every now and then tweets about South Africa, always in a negative sense. Is that falling off the agenda now because there are more important things going on?
Well, I think Elon's he's overextended himself, I think is the correct business term. You know, people have stopped buying his cars in Europe, and he's beginning to realize that politics is more powerful than business. And that's the thing that a lot of business people forget, that politics trumps business. You can see he's got, you know, I think that he's going to have to reel his neck in. I also think I just can't see him surviving that long with Trump.
What about your country? What about the rise of reform? Because I'm sure this video is going to be very closely watched,
yeah,
by people in South Africa who are saying, there's an opportunity. What can we learn from this man?
Well, I think we've had a few issues the last couple of weeks. People that watch politics with big political egos get in the way of each other. But that's politics. Reform has come from a low base to be leading national opinion polls, which is, you know, what you said. But it is benefiting from the kind of none of the above. So in other words, people are so hacked off with existing political parties, they're turning towards reform. And reform has got yet to lay out what its actual policies are. And I think it would be well advised not to do that yet. You know, if you're winning, just keep winning. Or be like Trump and have what we would call themes without too much actual policy detail. So I find South African politics fascinating, but also deeply uninspiring. As I say, the DA, their aspirations just seem to be to moderate an ANC government. They don't have any actual leadership aspirations to turn the country round and be the next government, which is, I think, what one of your other speakers, you know, alluded to.
It's a very interesting perception, and certainly sometimes you need someone outside to see where we might be going wrong in South Africa. But there is a theme almost that's coming through here. Moletsi Mbeki said the same thing, go for 51%. But on the other hand, if the DA were to walk out of the government of national unity, which, yeah, people won't, they might be really punished, not just by getting a lower vote at the next time round, but by having Jacob Zuma and co coming.
No, I meant more in terms of the personalities. There's not one personality I think, well, there's a leader or someone that's got a real inspiration or idea for the country. I'm not saying walk out of it, although it is historically the case that if you're in a coalition, you nearly always get punished for being a coalition partner. That was true of the Liberal Democrats. It was true of Winston Peters in New Zealand, that somehow you don't get any of the credit, but you get all the blame. And I, you know, when they leave, at some point they'll have to leave the coalition before the election or go down with it.
I read recently that one of the advantages of getting older is that you see trends. You see things repeat themselves. Now, the trend that we're seeing in the world right now is politics and society is moving from the left across to the right. I guess the improvement in the Reform Party's fortunes is part of that. Are you seeing that as being sufficient and lasting long enough to sweep the Labour government out come 2029.
Well, I see it slightly differently. I think we're quite surprised to have got to where we got to so quickly. After 4.5 years of a socialist government, I think most of what we would call the soft Tory voters will be willing to climb over hot coals to vote probably Reform or for a real conservative option. But it's also as well the effect that a party like Reform has. You can see the Labour Party is shifting to the right in a way we probably wouldn't have expected to see them. You've got Keir Starmer wants to take the Russians on now. You know, he wants to send British troops to Ukraine, which I would be, you know, hugely against. But their Reform are pushing them in a way that is making them almost change their own tune. Now, I don't believe the tune, but it's pushing them in that kind of, you know, direction. And that's where the DA is failing, really, because if your popularity starts rising, it puts pressure on your opposition to change. And I think it all just seems a bit too cozy and a bit sort of, you know, business as normal.
Well, we'll see. We've got the national budget today. In fact, you'll be speaking in 3 minutes, and we see how that all forms out. There might be some excitement, I'm sure.
Mm.
But you mentioned some excitement. Now, with the fact that you know the players, you know two of the big players in this global environment. When you look forward to the excitement that we're going to see around the world and in Africa, how does it pan out for you?
I think it's impossible to say. Because as I said, Trump is attempting to rip up the world order. I think it was Machiavelli who said there's nothing more dangerous or difficult than changing the existing order. Because the people that might benefit from the new order don't yet know it, and the people that have got the vested interest don't want to change. And I think that's where, with Trump, I mean, it could go horribly wrong or it could go horribly right. So we have to wait and see how the whole thing's gonna sort of, you know, it's gonna settle. I mean, I think he's on a mission. And that's why, by the way, I think he's talking about Greenland or territory. I think he wants to do something that's, you know, changes the course of history. For right or wrong, America's going to be a lot more robust, you know, than this kind of liberal democracy that it was. It's going to be something different. But what it looks like, it's hard to say.
How long might it take for this all to give us a steer on whether he has been horribly right or horribly wrong?
Well, I'm sure half the audience thinks he's horribly wrong already, but and half think he's probably right. Who gives a rat's arse about the stock market? I don't. It's just a weighing system for sentiment. And I would argue most asset prices in the world are overpriced anyway. You know, if you're a kid in London, you can't possibly buy a house because it's ridiculously overpriced. Maybe there's an argument that these asset bubbles are built up with money printed by the central government, ultra low interest rates. Maybe we need a bit of harsh realignment, you know, and generally you've got older people who've got way too much money. The younger people have got absolutely nothing. So maybe it needs a damn good shake up. Every so often in the world needs to be taken by the scruff and given a bloody good shake. And I think that's what Trump's, you know, busy doing. But I think for strategic reasons, South Africa will be right at the front of it. Because I think strategically, America's going to need rare minerals. It's going to need resource. And so where does it look for that? Well, he's talked about Greenland, the nearest, spot really is Africa. And so I think they're going to be coming out of the blocks hard on realigning African politics.
As you say, it's going to be an exciting adventure. But we've seen it in BizNews. We've seen the interest in the news cycle is just off the charts lately. We're going to move to some conversation now from the audience. Marcel Demmler is here from Germany.
Yeah.
And his question is, do you regret supporting Brexit?
Hell no. Of course not. We're British. We're not German or European. We do not belong in Europe. It's not our destiny. Definitely not. I think, by the way, we're seeing benefits from Brexit all the time, and that will become even more clear as the geopolitics, pan out.
Just
Someone said to me, by
elaborate.
the way, what, name one, left-wing people always say, name one Brexit benefit. You can't name one single benefit, can you? I said, well, we're saving 12 billion quid a year, which if you converted that at a gilt rate of 5% to how much you'd have to have in the bank, it would be like £250 billion. So we're not going to have to get involved with the European army, which they're now gleefully sort of putting together. You've now, I mean, look at German politics. It's a complete mess. You've got a right-wing, supposedly German winner of the election having to make a pact with what is effectively an EFF type Green Party and the like. So, no, I'm pretty pleased with Brexit.
It appears as though the British public is divided on that, though.
They were always divided on it. I mean, as you, I think you said in the opening remarks, the polls told us that Remain were going to win 60-40, and they ended up losing.
When can they translate that into actual power, those polls into power? When's the next date that the
I think
Brits
it's
go?
2029. So
2029.
it's a long way off, and that's why I think reform would be well advised not to come up with too many policies, but just what I would call the general direction of travel.
So just let the Labour Party continue to mess it up and presumably then sweep to power in 2029. Is that your plan?
Yeah, our primary mission is to destroy the Conservative Party. We operate in a first-past-the-post system. Frankly, they've done a pretty good job of destroying it themselves. Five leaders in, 15 years. I mean, to quote Monty Python, what have the Conservatives ever done for us? Nothing.
Jacques Poupard's question is, will Trump oppose China if they make a move to invade Taiwan?
Yes, I think he would. I don't see the Chinese as doing that. But I think he views China as the enemy. And so I think for that reason, he would be, wouldn't let that happen.
So the follow-up question is, if so, would Trump commit the US military against China to defend Taiwan?
Yes, I think he would.
So that's World War III.
Not always. I mean, you, as we've seen in Ukraine and Russia, you can have conventional military wars without nuclear weapons.
Gerrit Lampen, who's a very famous stockbroker, ex-stockbroker, says, in economics too, we learn that nations get richer through free trade and that tariffs make all nations poorer. Ben Bernanke actually wrote his thesis on that. Surely these tariffs will reduce trade and make all nations poorer, including America. So should we sell all our shares and invest in gold? And some would ask Bitcoin.
Well, I own a lot of gold, let's put it that way. But the first part of that question was free trade. What has been going on is not free trade. I mean, he's talked about reciprocal tariffs. Why don't we criticize Canada for all the tariffs they put on their internal products, or the Chinese have been doing this for years, and the Japanese before them, and the EU. So, I mean, Trump hates the EU and these types of protective kind of arrangements. So you could say free trade, but it's not free trade when you just use America as a dumping ground for your products.
It's a very good point. I recall listening to some pretty educated people saying it was better in terms of the amount of money that you earn to be a cow in Europe than to be a person in Africa. In other words, the subsidies for the cattle in Europe was higher.
I mean, that's the other thing about the European Union. The Common Agricultural Policy, you know, just sponsored inefficient farming. It was interesting when the Brits joined the common market and the New Zealand farmers were cut out of huge markets. Their reaction to it has become more efficient, and now they're a very successful agricultural trading nation. So these kind of, you know, you get laws of unexpected consequences. One of the things I always thought about with South Africa was when you, if you're white male and you can't work in government or the Navy or anywhere, what does it mean? Your only option left to you is to be an entrepreneur. So all they've done is actually seeded off, you know, the entrepreneurial spirit of white guys in South Africa, the opposite probably of what they thought. So, this unintended consequence thing always kicks in.
It's a very, very good point. I recall having a golf game with the CEO then of RMB Private Bank, and he made that point. He said, look around. We were in Pretoria. He said, look around at all these houses. These are all guys, Afrikaans guys, who previously would have worked for the state, but they were kicked out and now they're entrepreneurs.
I mean, every entrepreneur, not every, but most entrepreneurial companies that made it big in this country are Afrikaans-owned businesses.
Gary Brown says, what are Aaron's thoughts on Scottish independence? Now that the SNP is on the down, is that issue settled for good?
Well, I mean, they couldn't run the country. They couldn't even build a couple of ferries, you know, without massive corruption and the like. I mean, it's, on some level, I wish they would go away, you know, but really, they've been incapable of running their own affairs or have done it very badly. Same with Wales, to be honest. I mean, the Welsh Senate, there's no parliament in the world that's run worse than the Welsh government. You only have to look at the... I was looking through DEI, woke, all this stuff. The money that's being just wasted when they should be focused on the health system. You know, you wait 24 hours for an ambulance now in Wales. You know, all the things that are important to people are being completely neglected at the altar of political correctness and nonsense. And for some reason, the UK has swallowed this bullshit more effectively than any other country in the world. It really has gone for it in a meaningful way. But I think reform is going to put pay to that.
We've got the two biggest polluters in South Africa, the CEOs here.
Yep.
Dan Marukani will be talking here after Chris. And tomorrow, Simon Baloyi, Dan Marukani, CEO of Eskom. And tomorrow, Simon Baloyi, who's the CEO of Sasol, will be talking. And both of them have been whipped with this net zero rod. Have you got any insight there?
I think Trump's going to put pay to net zero. I mean, the Chinese already, you know, just pay it lip service. I mean, they keep on opening a coal-fired power station every other week. They just don't care. And actually, it's a convenient sort of religion almost. I mean, if you think about people need to believe in something, and I think net zero has been one of those things. There's a difference between good environmental stewardship and net zero, which has become a political almost doctrine or religion. But I think that with China going hard at it, the Americans are going to go drill, baby, drill for low energy costs. And I think you look at Europe, I mean, no one's in a position to really take net zero seriously. I saw for the first time BP the other day said, we're dropping all this. Not quite said that, but we're dropping this nonsense and getting back to producing oil. So I think South Africa would be well advised to drop it in the waste paper bin and move on.
I'm sure that would be music to the ears at Eskom, because they've been pushed into huge costs on renewables as well, in the same way as the UK has done. What unforeseen consequences, asks Andrew Van Damme, will Trumpism likely see?
Unforeseen.
Unintended consequences.
Well, if I could foresee it, it wouldn't be unforeseen. So I don't really know how to answer that. I mean, I think the wonderful thing about it is, you know, if you're a disruptor like I am, I quite enjoy is Gulf of America. It makes me laugh. You know, it upsets a lot of people, you know, get a sense of humor. But I think unfortunate side effects, I think the unfortunate ones would be if he continues to go at it too fast. It's a marathon, and I think he's trying to run it like 100 meters. But that would be the business person inside of me. I want to get things done. And so I think that he's just going at it. You know, he got elected on 5 promises. He's damn well trying to deliver all 5 as quickly as he can.
You did say it could go horribly wrong or horribly right. And I guess the question is, what would you define as horribly wrong?
World War III.
That's
a risk anyway, isn't it? I mean, I think if you think about how I see the world is that it's developed into huge government, what I would call corporatism rather than capitalism. You know, when we were growing up, you could earn a living, buy a house, have a family, have a reasonable standard of living. Now you're almost a paid indentured serf for the government. And, you know, corporations have become huge and almost governmental. So somehow we've got to get back to the idea of capitalism and free markets and nation states. You know, that to me that's the big issue. And I think Trump will push it in that direction, but whether he'll get it right or wrong, that's a big open question.
Byron Lotter, who's also a stockbroker, says, do you honestly believe that pushing down asset prices so that young people can buy homes is the answer? That sounds like a socialist ideology. Ask the ANC for advice. They're experts at destroying value.
Well, I think all stockbrokers like seeing stocks go up because people buy more stocks and get more commission. So I'd say what he just said there is completely wrong. I mean, at the end of the day, asset prices have been inflated, not because of demand for the assets, but because of expansion of the money base, you know, colossal printing of money. The US is running a $36 trillion deficit, and these have all expressed themselves in higher asset prices. So you end up with a situation where you either have assets or you do not have assets. And historically, the people that do not have the assets, there's more of them. And then that leads to revolution, or the people that had the assets lose them to the people that didn't have them. So that's not really a sensible way forward. Yes, asset prices are way too expensive.
Devont Libber asks, given the ANC's relationship with Iran, is there any chance of Donald Trump enabling a regime change in South Africa?
Well, I think he's going to start with a regime change in Iran. We hosted a party for the inauguration, which was in a famous hotel called the Hay Adams, and it overlooks the White House. And one of the guests at the party was actually the Shah of Iran's son, or the deposed Shah of Iran. He's very close to the American administration. So if you want a little guess or a tip for the future, I think there's going to be regime change in Iran, and I wouldn't bet on him coming back to Iran. So regime change in South Africa, I think he's going to go after BRICS. He's going to try and break it up, and that applies to a lot of these kind of supranational organizations.
Well, he does have a good relationship with Modi in India, and Russia might be on board, as we heard earlier on the conversations that go on at those levels. Martin S. asks, will the UK become a world power again? There's been a steady decline in influence over many decades.
I'd like to think yes, but, you know, your rational side of you says, no, we're on a downward trajectory and we're either going to stop it or we're not. But at the moment, it's I'd rather back South Africa than the UK. I know that sounds weird to say, but the dynamics of the UK are horrific. And I think unless something radically changes, like in Argentina, or we get new leadership, which hopefully is reform, it's going to be difficult to find its way back.
Argentina has been an interesting example and a case study where initially when Milei came in, he was written off pretty much by all and sundry. Mm. And a year later, he's now being applauded in the stage at the World Economic Forum. Would reform be a similar kind of an economic approach?
Well, I think that's what the UK needs. Its institutions have become staid and bogged down, and it needs revitalization. But it's perhaps not the British way, you know. It needs a revolution, but it's going to be hard to deliver that. I was impressed with the guy in Argentina when he first started out in politics, and they said behind the scene, well, you know, you like strip clubs, you like cocaine, you like hookers, you like parties. How the hell will you ever get elected? So he called his first press conference and he said, look, chaps, I like hookers, I like cocaine, I like parties. And he literally just killed all of the potential criticisms against him by just openly coming out and saying, it's my life and this is what I like doing. I can't quite see Nigel doing that, but it's...
No, it's extraordinary
approach.
If you want a lesson in economics, just watch one of Malay's.
I mean, Argentina, speeches. By the way, is now the fastest growing economy in South America, and that's why I would say about South Africa, all of the demographics, all of the things are in South Africa's favour if it can just get its act together. It could be like Argentina. And also, however bad it gets, you can always turn it around. I mean, they had hyperinflation. The country was in a handcart. So if you can turn it around that quickly, just imagine how quickly you could turn South Africa around.
Well, we heard today that the public sector is takes 16% of GDP. It should be 6. And we also heard earlier the week that BEE premiums, let alone nothing else, just the laws, add another $150 billion to costs. So those are two huge numbers that could be turned around. Derek Martin asks, how does reform plan to stimulate the UK economy, which is anemic like ours in South Africa?
Well, I think that comes back to the Argentinian sort of argument. It's slashing public spending. It's investing in the things that can really create growth. I mean, one of the policies we were looking, let's say in Wales, was to create a world-class university that would be in the top 10 in the world, a bit like MIT, that focused on robotics and AI and new industries. So you've got to shift the thing away to the sorts of industries that can give you, you know, terrific growth in the future. And I think it just requires a whole mindset. It probably requires the obliteration of the British civil service, who are the enemy within. I mean, it doesn't matter which party is elected, they're trying to stop them doing what they're doing. And they do a bloody good job of doing that.
Stuart Wilmington wants to know, what is your view of free speech in the UK currently? As an outsider, it seems it's totally under threat. Will it change with Trump in office?
Is free speech under threat in the UK? I mean, the police have gone fully woke. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the things they investigate, they won't investigate a burglary or, you know, things they should be investigating. If you send a hurty tweet or a Facebook post, they're out there in force, you know, interviewing the person. But it's this, as I say, the British have swallowed the whole woke DEI thing whole, the whole Bible, straight down the throat. So it's not just politics that need to change, it's all of the institutions within the British state are rotten to the core.
Tommy Robinson?
I'm not a fan, but I believe what he's done is highlight the issues that were needed highlighting. I think I probably have pretty much the same view as Nigel on that, that you can highlight something, be right, without being a particularly endearing character.
We all know Nigel Farage, but does Reform have a strong contingent of competent professional politicians and administrators to take up positions of power if the party wins the next national elections?
That's probably a weakness at the moment, but as I say, for Reform, it's more about direction of travel rather than actually having those people in place. I mean, if you look at the Conservative Party and the Labour Party that have come in, I mean, the standard of politician is as low as it's ever been. So I don't really see that as an issue at the moment. I mean, when we get round to 2029, we're going to elect hundreds of Reform MPs, and that's the right time to ask that question.
Do you agree that AI is a game changer like the personal computer and the internet that will cause huge productivity gains?
Yes. I mean, there's absolutely no doubt about it. But I think it's in common with a lot of things over the years. It will increase productivity, but also increase output. So, you know, you go back to the days of the spinning Ginny or the, trying to remember from my schoolboy history when they smashed up the machines, you know, the Luddites, because they didn't like the fact that a machine could now, you know, weave. But I think that that revolution is going to be led from the United States of America, and it's going to change all of our lives in a very fundamental way. And the political issues arising from it are massive, and I don't think anyone's got any answers for that.
We've just got news, thank you, Les, for posting it, that the VAT will increase in South Africa from 15 to 15.5% on the 1st of May and to 16% on the 1st of April. We'll have more detail, insight on that in the budget, post-budget discussion tomorrow. I'm not so sure that it's universally agreed, but there's a question to you,
well, actually,
Leon Portito, about VAT.
Yeah, it was actually a stat I saw the other day, which is talked about direct taxes and indirect taxes. VAT is a tax on the poor, not the rich, because the rich, their percentage of their income that gets paid away in indirect taxes like VAT is tiny compared to poorer people, where it's huge, you know, because it's going on your essentials of life. So it's a regressive tax on the poorest in South Africa. I mean, that's what I mean by the DA. They should be coming out and saying, not on your life, you're not going to do this. But they just roll over.
Well, maybe they have.
Well, maybe they haven't.
No, they have.
Well, but it's going up, right?
Well, Helen's not here, but she did tell me beforehand that they have. So we'll hear from her later.
Mm.
But die poppe gaan dans here in South Africa. Hulle gaan dans. But there's more to that, and we will
be discussing
it tomorrow.
So I misunderstood that VAT is going.
So from what I understand, because of the way that the budget is structured in South Africa, even though the budget doesn't get passed by a majority, the finance minister can approve an increase in VAT. But we'll find out more about that now. That's
no, but that was my point, though. You come back to what I've forgotten the name of your speaker earlier said, that really that's when you should be using your power in coalition to say no.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's not speculate. I believe that...
Anyway, that was my point.
That's in the works. So lots of fun and games coming. As you say, the adventure begins. It's here in South Africa. It's beginning around the world. It's extraordinary. You like it as a disruptor, but people who are not disruptors, how do they get through this next however many years?
Just put a cold towel on their head and sit with there with a beer, I should do. I mean, if nothing else, Trump's interesting, isn't he? He's a act of nature, really. But I think, by the way, we'll never see anything like this ever again. I mean, that's a rock solid certainty. A politician that actually says he's going to do something and then goes out and does it. And everyone goes, oh my God, I can't believe he's done that. Well, you obviously weren't listening to the US election, because he did exactly what he said he was going to do.
And will Nigel Farage do that?
Nigel's more the sort of guy you take back to meet your granny for a cup of tea. He's definitely, he's not out of the Trump mould. Although I would say he's, he's a consummate politician, and I think they're going to really struggle to stop him winning in 2029.
Will's question, do you think that Trump will attempt to destroy the EU?
Destroy?
The European Union?
Yes, he hates it. I mean, Trump is essentially for the nation state, as I am. I hate the EU with a passion. I think it's, as Gorbachev said, why would you be trying to recreate communism within Western Europe? That was his take on the European Union. It's my take on the European Union. I mean, you look at Romania, they've just cancelled elections there at the behest of the EU. It's not democratic. If you vote against an EU diktat, you're told to go and do it again until you get the right answer. It's essentially, if you can't vote in and out your own politicians to make your own laws, you're not a sovereign country.
We're getting a lot of themes coming through. That Moletsi Mbeki was mentioning that as well, with a constituency, which was agreed apparently, as he was saying, in South Africa, and yet we don't have that yet. Martin Lowe, last question for the day. Arguably, Trump has appointed a rather competent cabinet. Do you think he will be inclined to listen to good advice, even if he's in disagreement with it?
Sorry, can you just repeat that?
Trump has appointed what appears to be a competent cabinet this time around. Do you think that he will be inclined to listen to their advice, even if he disagrees with it?
He's thin-skinned, narcissistic, and will do what he wants to do.
So no?
I think that's no, yes.
Aaron Banks, thank you.
Thank you.
Right now, you can get the cheapest Forex rate around, right here, on Shift. Pay less for your dollars, pounds, and euros here. And get to shop more here. And do more here. And enjoy more ooh-la-la here. Shift also lets you trade and transfer currencies and buy shares in the world's best companies. It all happens right here, on Shift. You won't find a cheaper Forex rate anywhere else, no matter where you bank. Download the Shift app today.
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
Downings is South Africa's leading marquee infrastructure company, proudly celebrating 25 years of excellence, renowned for creativity, innovation, and unmatched technical expertise. Our event marquees and semi-permanent structures elevate any project with style and sophistication. Whether it's a corporate event or a commercial project, we tailor every structure to meet your needs with world-class precision. Visit downings.co.za to consult with our expert team. Downings, your trusted marquee specialists nationwide.